This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pompeo sent to Riyadh. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, Tuesday, October 16. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Saudi Arabia to discuss the disappearance of a U.S. citizen who's a Washington Post columnist and a critic of the Crown Prince.
President Trump says he'll ask Congress for disaster funding after visiting areas of Florida and Georgia wrecked by Hurricane Michael.
A judge has thrown out the defamation lawsuit brought by adult film actress Stormy Daniels against President Trump.
And the common retirement savings advice that might be defeating you psychologically.
What's happening is people hear those numbers and it just scares them and it deters them from actually saving as much as they could because they're like, I'll never get there.
Katie Hill at moneyish.com on rethinking the common retirement advice. She's here in about 20 minutes. Two reports say that Saudi Arabia is preparing to acknowledge the death of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in a botched interrogation. CNN said yesterday that the kingdom is finalizing such a report. The New York Times reported the Crown Prince had approved an interrogation or rendition of Mr. Khashoggi back to Saudi Arabia. It says the Saudi government would shield the prince by blaming an intelligence official. Florida Senator Marco Rubio was on Fox News.
It's unfortunate because they're an important part of our Middle Eastern strategy to constrain Iran, but that cannot allow us to overlook something as horrific as this if in fact that's what happened. And I do believe eventually we're going to know one way or the other.
Meanwhile, President Trump dispatched Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to meet King Salman over the case. Mr. Khashoggi, a U.S. resident, Washington Post columnist, and leading critic of the powerful Saudi Crown Prince, vanished after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul 2 weeks ago. Crews continue to restore power as residents come to grips with the devastation in parts of the Florida panhandle following Hurricane Michael. President Trump toured hard-hit areas yesterday after arriving at Eglin Air Force Base.
To see this personally, it's very tough, very, very tough. Total devastation.
At a distribution center in Lynn Haven, north of Panama City, Mr. Trump passed out water bottles with First Lady Melania Trump.
It seemed almost like a giant tornado, a really wide tornado.
He then traveled to Macon, Georgia for a storm briefing. He's able to ask Congress for disaster funding. Mr. Trump emphasized the main priority right now is providing food, water, and safety for residents. Hurricane Michael slammed into Florida as a Category 4 storm last Wednesday, initially packing 155 mile-per-hour winds, and continued north to Virginia, leaving nearly 20 people dead and hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses without electricity. A federal judge in Los Angeles has thrown out the defamation lawsuit by adult film actress Stormy Daniels against President Trump on free speech grounds. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
U.S. District Judge James Otero said in a ruling yesterday that the court agrees with Mr. Trump's argument because the tweet in question constitutes rhetorical hyperbole normally associated with politics and public discourse in the U.S. He wrote, "The First Amendment protects this type of rhetorical statement." The actress sued the president over a tweet in which he denied her claims of being threatened by a man in a Las Vegas parking lot in 2011. The ruling also states that the president is entitled to an award of his attorney's fees against Stormy Daniels. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Ms. Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, has said she had a fling once with Mr. Trump in 2006 and carried on a friendship with him for about a year. Ms. Daniels' lawsuit over a hush money deal is still pending. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by Staples. Staples helps keep your business moving with a huge selection of ink and toner, always in stock and always priced low. And during Staples' printing event this month, the prices are even lower. Staples. For much of the 20th century, Sears defined American retailing with catalogs and department stores that brought toys, tools, and appliances to millions of homes. But Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner says by the time Sears limped into bankruptcy yesterday, the once great company was shriveled and sickly. Suzanne, take us through this.
Those founders had left the business within just a very few years, and it was really other people that turned it into the the juggernaut that it became. It's almost hard to imagine, but they really were the Amazon of their day. They were just an incredible powerhouse.
I mean, from dishwashers and back to school clothing to homes,
they sold everything from
houses.
Live chickens to houses. Yeah. Right?
How important was that Sears catalog?
Oh, that, it really transformed the lives of rural Americans who before that really had no way, of getting goods. I think at one point they were shipping a catalog to almost every American home in the country. And, people to this day still remember thumbing through that catalog for toys as a kid, for Christmas gifts. That catalog really meant a lot to people.
And you said too, which I didn't know, that Sears was actually one of the first companies to deliver, one of the first companies to have a website, right?
Right, back in 1999. They were an early mover in a lot of ways. They weren't able to execute recently on some of their vision. They launched a website in 1999, which is early, but they just, weren't able to capitalize on that and just lost ground to everyone from Macy's to Amazon to Walmart.
What did the observers say was the downfall? Like, why couldn't they capitalize? What was the problem?
They lost focus, and back in the 80s, they diversified into financial services. They bought Dean Witter and Coldwell Banker, and although they ended up selling all those businesses about a decade later, that took their eye off the ball. And in the interim, you had companies like Walmart and Target opening hundreds of stores in strip centers, which were closer to where people lived, and these big box chains were easier to shop. You could get in and out quickly. And all of a sudden, Sears woke up to find that its stores, which were basically in shopping malls, weren't where people were shopping anymore.
It hasn't made money since when?
2010.
Well, we're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. Her piece is about Sears. It's called Sears Reshaped America, from Kenmore to Allstate, now in the wake of its bankruptcy filing. 100,000 pensioners who worked for Sears, are they in trouble?
Potentially, but the government pension guarantee organization is actually listed as Sears' largest creditor. And so it's unclear exactly how that's going to work. The pensioners may be okay, but some of their financial security may be eroded. But, that's something that'll have to be negotiated in bankruptcy court.
And there was a graphic in your story, 900-something stores at one point recently, to just whittle down almost a fraction of that.
Well, that's right. And through this bankruptcy process now, they want to close another 150 immediately. They're going to put 250 up for review and maybe end up with just 300 stores, which is kind of unbelievable.
What a fall. Thanks, Suzanne. Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. 19 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Word in the Saudi government is preparing to say the death of prominent journalist Jamal Khashoggi was the result of an interrogation by Saudi operatives that went wrong. Khashoggi vanished after entering a Saudi consulate in Istanbul on October 2nd, igniting a global firestorm over the circumstances of his disappearance. Saudi officials are expected to claim that the mission was initiated to interrogate Khashoggi, a frequent critic of the government, not kill him. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo arrived today in Saudi Arabia for talks with King Salman over the disappearance of Khashoggi. President Trump toured hurricane-torn areas of Florida and Georgia yesterday, declaring that nobody has seen anything like this, as crews continue to restore power and residents try to pick up the pieces.
Hard to believe. I've seen pictures, but it's hard to believe when you're above it in a plane and to see the total devastation. You see no houses left. Not even the pads are left. It's incredible.
Trump said he would ask Congress for disaster funding, though no amount was given. Personal computers, conservation, pro football, rock and roll, and rocket ships. Paul Allen couldn't have asked for a better way to spend, invest, and donate the billions he reaped from co-founding Microsoft with childhood friend Bill Gates. Allen used the fortune he made from Microsoft to invest in other ambitions, from tackling climate change and advanced brain research to finding innovative solutions to solve some of the world's biggest challenges. The 65-year-old Allen died yesterday of cancer. Dozens of drug makers plan to start disclosing the prices for prescription drugs advertised on TV. But the Trump administration says the move announced by the industry's largest trade group doesn't go far enough. The prices won't be actually shown in the TV commercial. The ad will include a website where the list price will be posted. Hawaii isn't just the deal family's pick for a summer vacation. It's been named the number one destination for a winter getaway. U.S. News and World Report ranks the Big Island tops for its warm weather and excellent surfing conditions. Rounding out the top five are Rome, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, New Orleans, and Phuket, Thailand.
Wow. I would take Hawaii year-round. I'm a Kauai guy. Specifically, that's my island.
Did you do any surfing?
I didn't do any surfing. Okay. We snorkeled and stuff like that. But 70,000 people on Kauai, that's it. One road, like one main highway that loops the outside of the island, that is it. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Talking about saving enough for retirement can be a deflating experience, especially if you get caught up in numbers. The most common retirement savings advice seems so far from achievable for most people that many get freaked out and shun saving even close to enough. Advice like, save $1 million. Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com, says maybe we should retire this advice. Katie, give us some numbers.
Nearly half of families don't have anything saved for retirement. Those that do, the median in their 30s is about $45,000. In their 60s is about $172,000. So we have this lofty, lofty retirement advice. That's great, right? That's wonderful. Good. Have $1 million. Have more. That sounds great. But what's happening is people hear those numbers, and it just scares them, and it deters them from actually saving as much as they could, because they're like, I'll never get there.
Yeah. The benchmarks, too, are so general. They don't necessarily apply to you individually. I think we fail to see that, too.
Oh, for sure, right? It depends on where you live. So some people, you're going to try to retire, say, in the Northeast where we are. We're probably going to need a lot more than somebody retiring somewhere else. So, yeah, these are general benchmarks. And look, I mean, great, go for it. It's just most people aren't achieving it. And I just spoke to a ton of financial therapists and psychologists, financial advisors for this story, and they said when you give someone one big lofty goal rather than breaking it into teeny tiny chunks, for them, people are just like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get there, whatever, you know, I'm not going to worry about this, it's never going to happen for me, or I'll do it later. But you really got to talk to people about money in a different way than we often are.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com. She's got an interesting piece about retirement savings, and it's called This Common Retirement Savings Advice is Sneakily Wrecking People's Finances. What can you do to stem the tide here if you feel like you're in this downward spiral and think, man, I'm never going to save enough. I'll never match what these so-called experts want?
Good. I mean, I think you're exactly right, and we can do something about this. So instead of thinking, I need $1 million, what am I going to do? Break it down simple, right? First thing you're going to do, if you're not saving anything and your employer gives you the match at work, just go get the match. Just start there, right? That's free money. Put in up to what they'd match. And then remember this, right? It's okay. Like you don't have a lot of money right now. It's okay to up your retirement savings by just about 1% or a year or something if that's all you can manage. You know, it might take you longer. It's going to take you longer to save than somebody else. But, you know, if you can't get to 15% of your income, you know, tomorrow, that's okay. You can start and you can inch it up 1%, 1%, 1% a year if that's what it takes. But thinking of it in those little terms, like, oh, I'm just going to get the match this year. Okay, well, next year I'll just up it 1%. That makes it psychologically for a lot of people more palatable, and so they're more likely to actually do it.
Mm. What was the point you made about thinking in terms of transitions?
Right. So maybe you can't save right now, right? You're like, oh, I can't save that much right now. Think about when you might be able to. So you're going to have paid off your car. Will you be able to save then? You know, think of concrete things that are going to happen to you. And then at that point, I'm going to pay off my car. And immediately I'm going to start putting that $500 a month into, you know, my retirement savings. So think of it like that, too. But again, you know, just think of it in these small, manageable chunks, because there's all this research on goals and when people meet their goals. And it's not when they make this, I'm going to lose 50 pounds by next year with no little, you know, not breaking up that into little chunks.
Yeah.
It's the people who are like, I'm going to do a pound a week for this many weeks. Here's how I'm going to do it. It's those people that achieve it, and it's the same thing with retirement savings usually.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Look into any great business, whether it's a manufacturer or a hotel, a store, school, or hospital. Look into each and every one of them, and you'll find the same thing. Great people. At Kronos, we believe that great businesses are powered by great people. And with Kronos Workforce Solutions, we'll help you find them, keep them, and engage them. Learn more at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, October 16. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Pompeo in Saudi Arabia to discuss a missing journalist who's a U.S. resident. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen has died. Stormy Daniels' defamation suit against President Trump is dismissed. Stephen Hawking's posthumous book is out today. Mega Millions jackpot, $654 million and growing for tonight. Packers beat the Niners in Monday Night Football. And how a couple stranded by Hurricane Michael got their help message seen on an aerial map. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors know there's nothing small about your business. They provide one-on-one partnership and reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors to get business done. After running as the archetypical outsider in earlier campaigns, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz has leaned on his establishment connections to win re-election. James Arkin, Senate campaigns reporter at Politico, has a look at the challenge from Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke. James, set this up.
Essentially, after Ted Cruz's 2016 presidential campaign, you know, in the first couple of months to first 18 months, really, of President Trump, we saw a very different Senator Cruz than what we saw when he came to the Senate in 2012. He was working collaboratively with his colleagues. He was working collaboratively with the White House. He was working very hard to kind of play the inside game and get things done. And so what we're seeing now is in the last 6 weeks, there was some concern that Senator Cruz was facing a little bit of trouble from Beto O'Rourke, you know, the massive Democratic superstar who's pulling in record sums of money, you know, maybe making Texas Senate competitive. And, you know, one thing that Senator Cruz has not relied on in the past, but that he was able to rely on and get help with, was the party establishment kind of coming in and helping him out. You know, the vice president raising money, the president's son campaigning for him, the president offering to come down and campaign for him. So, you know, Senator Cruz, sort of the quintessential outsider candidate, got some help from the Washington insiders in the Republican Party to kind of stabilize the race and make it, you know, give him an edge down there in Texas.
And how does this play among those who supported him for being an outsider?
It's interesting. What I think you probably see from Ted Cruz's supporters, his hardcore supporters, is they would argue that, you know, he's still the conservative firebrand that he always was. He's still, you know, he hasn't abandoned his values. One of the folks that I talked to from Texas told me essentially, you know, if Ted Cruz was changing his values or becoming more of a moderate, you'd see a collapse in his support.
Okay.
And that's not really what's happening. It's more that he's just relying on help. He's being more collaborative. He's being less of a bomb thrower. And that, you know, it's benefited him. And I don't think he's lost supporters because of it.
Got it. Why did the, as you said, the piece, his campaign wobbled earlier this year? Why is that? What did Mr. O'Rourke do for his part as part of this Senate campaign?
Well, I think the thing about O'Rourke is he raised a ton of money and he raised a ton of attention. You know, he was pulling in crazy amounts of money. He was holding these rallies that, you know, thousands of people were going to, and he kind of sparked sort of a little bit of a movement. And he was up on TV before Ted Cruz. He was outspending Ted Cruz on TV, and that's very surprising, you know, that a Democrat could be outspending and outraising a Republican in Texas, especially one as widely known as Ted Cruz. And so it just sparked a little bit of concern that maybe the sort of Beto movement was real, in fact. And I think Cruz campaign and Republicans in Texas kicked it into full gear towards the end of the summer and going into the fall, kind of realizing that they were facing a stiff challenge. And you know, they've stepped it up. Polling shows that Ted Cruz is leading pretty, he's not running away with it, but he's got a healthy, pretty safe lead in the race. And so, you know, they had to kick it into gear. They were facing a stiff challenge from Beto O'Rourke. I mean, he raised $38 million in the third quarter.
Wow.
That is just an absolute record.
We're speaking with James Arkin, Senate campaign reporter for Politico. He's written a piece entitled Cruz Plays the Inside Game to Beat O'Rourke. You said that Senator Cruz sanded down some of the sharp edges on his personality. Give an example.
I think the clearest example of that is you look at the Affordable Care Act. You know, high-profile Republican fights to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And you remember, famously, Ted Cruz shut down the government over Obamacare when he first got to the Senate. You know, he was running rallies outside the Capitol, and he was really using sort of an outside pressure force on Republicans inside the Capitol to force their hand. And he did successfully force their hand, to the chagrin of, you know, his colleagues and folks in the Capitol. And the new time around in 2017, he was, you know, meeting with fellow Republican senators. He was working very closely with his colleagues. He wasn't throwing bombs outside. He was trying to get it done. And, you know, they were unsuccessful, but they were unsuccessful, you know, not because of Senator Cruz and because of him lobbing bombs the way that, you know, he had previously.
You quoted a Republican consultant in your story who said something to the effect of Beto O'Rourke had become like the Ted Cruz of this election, almost like he was taking a page from Cruz's playbook.
Yeah, in a sense, it's funny, you know, you get some pushback from Republicans and you refer to Beto O'Rourke as an outsider because he's been in politics for more than a decade and has a few House terms under him, but he's running this kind of campaign against, you know, the establishment, against politics as usual, against the way things are usually done in Washington. And so he's kind of trying to grip onto this sort of anti-establishment, anti-politics as usual mantle that Ted Cruz is famous for. And it's a clear contrast that it's, for a Democrat in Texas, it's very hard to run.
Thanks, James. James Arkin, Senate campaigns reporter at Politico. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us beyond the headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it looks like some folks continue to be just a little too good at decorating for Halloween. In a trend that has continued to grow in recent years, one Ohio man's decorations were so scary, someone called 911 believing that they were real. According to Fox News, Violet Township Fire and the Ohio State Highway Patrol responded to the home of Army veteran Delbert Holsinger after an alarmed witness saw an upside-down plane in his yard. The 85-year-old, who's retired from the Air National Guard, set up the fake crash along with a skeleton and a witch spilling out of the cockpit for the spooky season. Holsinger has said he has even more plans for the display in his yard, telling local TV he's thinking about adding a witch or a broom near the airplane so it looks like it ran into her. You might remember we told you a while back about a North Dakota woman who gave her neighborhood a scare after scrawling the words "Help me" in fake blood on her windows, prompting neighbors to frantically call the police.
Man.
And that one I kind of understood. That one seemed like it might be more plausible. But the plane overturned in the guy's front yard?
Right, come on, folks.
Or, you know, they called 911 and didn't even get close enough to see that there was a witch outside, or a skeleton outside of the plane and not an actual person.
You imagine that call to 911.
Right.
Well, there's a plane. It's not on fire or anything.
Right.
It's just resting in the yard, there's a witch nearby.
Right, but then two different agencies actually responded.
Yeah.
The Ohio State Highway Patrol and the fire department also responded.
How about Mr. Holsinger at 85 years old?
I was thinking the same thing.
Putting this together.
Nice work out of him.
The Halloween spirit, still strong.
Not a guy you want to mess with. And in more Halloween news, and in a follow-up to a story we told you about a few weeks back, Gordon, six people have managed to spend 30 hours in coffins as part of a ghoulish promotion at Six Flags St. Louis. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports that each of the survivors got to take home their coffin, two season passes, and some other prizes. The challenge started Saturday afternoon with a laying to rest ceremony and ended with a raising from the dead. Participants emerged only for bathroom breaks and a series of mini challenges. The coffin challenge was first introduced at the Six Flags theme park in St. Louis, but the event generated so much interest that it's expanding to all parks. Another similar challenge will take place this weekend at Six Flags Great America in Chicago. Now, you and I discussed this, that this so-called challenge didn't really seem like that much of a challenge at all. We'd actually kind of both welcome this 30-hour respite away from the daily stresses of life, wouldn't we?
And I think the last time, you know, you talked about the bathroom breaks.
Right.
Now we're actually learning that there are actually mini challenges.
Yes, mini challenges.
Like outside the coffin for even a few more minutes.
Right, I guess so. I guess they're getting food. And at this one in Chicago, they also mentioned they're going to get to charge their cell phones.
Brother.
They're going to get breaks to charge their cell phones, too. Because, God forbid they're in the coffin and bored at any time. They got to have a fully charged phone with them so they can text their friends.
Yeah, I got two thumbs down on that. This just doesn't seem like, I don't know, the real challenge that would be associated with Halloween, where you should be left in the darkness by yourself, somebody messing with the coffin, like rolling it around or, you know, angling it so it feels like you might be going upside down or something.
Yeah, if they bring that to our park here in New Jersey, I think we're both going
to
be on board.
Amen to that. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Facebook postings might predict whether people are suffering from depression. New research finds that the words people used seem to indicate whether they would later be diagnosed. The findings in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences offer a way to flag people who may be in need of help, but they also raise important questions about health privacy. People who were later clinically diagnosed with depression used more I language and words reflecting loneliness, sadness, and hostility. The team recruited 683 people who visited an emergency room for their study and asked to see their Facebook pages. Most were not depressed, but 114 of them had a depression diagnosis in their medical records. Words such as tears, cry, pain, miss, hate, and ugh were more common in the posts of people later diagnosed with depression. Another group of researchers reported last year that Instagram users might signal depression with black and white or otherwise muted colors in their posts. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court in Saudi Arabia's government is discussing a plan to admit that missing journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. The Wall Street Journal and other media outlets are reporting that the Saudis are putting together an explanation that would absolve Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of responsibility by giving him plausible deniability to say he didn't order the killing and didn't know about it. Yesterday, President Trump said the Saudis told him they weren't involved.
I don't want to get into his mind, but it sounded to me like maybe these could have been rogue killers. Who knows? We're going to try getting to the bottom of it very soon, but his was a flat denial.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Saudi Arabia to meet with the Crown Prince and King Salman. The federal government ran its largest budget deficit in 6 years during the fiscal year that ended last month, an unusual development in a fast-growing economy and a sign that tax cuts have restrained government revenue gains. The deficit totaled $779 billion in the fiscal year that ended September 30th, up 17% from fiscal 2017. The deficit is heading toward $1 trillion in the current fiscal year. An Idaho Fish and Game Commissioner has resigned after coming under fire for photos of a family of baboons and other animals he shot and killed on a hunting trip in Africa. A group of former commissioners first called for Blake Fisher to resign. Fisher emailed friends and coworkers photos of himself posing with a dead baboon family, as well as a giraffe, a leopard, and other animals he killed on a recent trip to Namibia. Happy times for sports fans in Wisconsin. The amazing Aaron Rodgers threw for 425 yards and two touchdowns as the Packers edged the 49ers 33-30. The touchdown that made it 30-all on WTMJ.
San Francisco showing a blitz through the A-gap, and here they come. Rodgers looking. Throws left side of the end zone. Touchdown!
Yes!
Devontae Adams! Left corner of the end zone from Aaron Rodgers!
Mason Crosby drilled a 27-yard field goal as time expired to give the Packers the win. And in the NLCS, the Brewers beat the Dodgers 4-0 to go up in that series 2-1.
As you and I know from having broadcasted sports together, it's not good practice in sports broadcasting 101 for the analysts to be cheering, right? But it is so much fun to listen to.
It's great.
Just respect the enthusiasm. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. A Florida husband and wife have been rescued after they used fallen trees to spell the word help on a lawn after being trapped by Hurricane Michael. Their niece saw their plea on an aerial map. Bay County Emergency Services. So they were contacted by the niece, Amber Gee, and dispatched help. USA Today says she fled her home near Panama City with her two kids on Thursday, but was concerned about her aunt and uncle. She was searching the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration interactive map Saturday and found her relative's plea on her grandmother's lawn in Youngstown, northeast of Panama City. A rescue team cut through downed trees to reach the house at about 2 a.m. local time Sunday, rescuing the couple and a family friend. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.